All right.
So this morning, we are continuing kind of in the season of Easter, which is the period from resurrection to Pentecost. And it's this season where we're reflecting on, you know, when Jesus was walking among and with the communities post-resurrection, what did that look like? And it was kind of the early beginnings of where the church starts getting formed and people start talking. Now, in light of resurrection, how do we live? What does that look like? And so this morning, in light of the church forming, in light of Easter, in light of the membership covenant that we've talked a lot about, we're going to celebrate with those who said, who've gone through it and said, you know, I'm ready, I'm at a point, and I'm going to covenant together with our community. And so we're going to talk a bit about that and then celebrate with those folks, all right? So I think I've said many, many, many times to the point of nauseam that this membership is really a covenant. That's what we're hoping. We live in a contractual society where people are making agreements to protect themselves, and we want to do the opposite. We want to covenant together and look out for the need of the other person. And so the lectionary text for this morning is in John 15, and we'll be in that briefly because I think it sets up this whole membership and coming together and the covenant really well. So if you have your Bibles, turn to John 15, read verses 5 through 12 just with the neighbor, and then we'll unpack it a little bit. All right, John chapter 15, go. All right. A few years ago when we first moved in to East Austin, soon we met a nemesis in our neighborhood that we were quite clear didn't like us and didn't want us to be in the neighborhood. And we learned this because it was our pecan tree in our front yard and it was trying to get rid of us. We know this for several reasons. One time Joshua, he was younger, was taking a shower. And then he was like, Dad, help, there's something strange happening. I run in, and what was previously just in the toilet was coming out of the shower. And I was like, get out, get out. And it turned out that the pecan tree had dug its roots into the pipes. It was like, welcome to the neighborhood. And then a few days after that, I was sitting there reading a book in our living room. And then something falls on our house that was so loud. I thought the whole house, it was like, I get up, and I'm like, what the? And I look outside, there was a sedan-sized branch that had come down on our house. And so I was like, wow, that was very dangerous. So we kind of move it to the, just drag it off to the side. A couple nights later, the exact same thing happens. Another sedan-sized branch, it's in the middle of the night. I was like, what the? And then I was like, oh, tree trying to kill us. And I went back to sleep. So the next morning, I called the tree doctor, and I was like, help, he's trying to kill us, do something. And then he's like, okay, sir, we can come out. First available appointments in 2 weeks. I was like, 2 weeks? We're not going to make it 2 weeks. He was like, okay, sir, calm down. Just tell me if the tree is dead or alive. Because if it's dead, it will come down. You might not make it. But if it's alive, we can wait 2 weeks. And I was like, oh, I do know it's alive. Because every 5 minutes, it was pecan season. It was hurling pecans at our house. Every 5 minutes, to the point where I would respond at night. It would go, and I'd wake up like, hello, come in. And then Karen's like, it's the pecans, you idiot. And this whole like metaphor of a tree and fruit and branches coming off, I just think it's a really graphic and beautiful picture that Jesus paints here in John 15. And then as we kind of enter and have this conversation about membership and covenant, because I think there's a few things here that I think are important to maybe point out. So the one thing we're required to do in this text is not remain with each other. I think sometimes we put a lot of pressure on ourselves. Well, we need to connect to a community. Then we have to like tie our branches. And if our branches aren't tight enough, then we'll start. We're not be committed, right? And I think the call is for us to remain in Him. And it's a covenant with God, first and foremost. And I think a lot of us, some people have asked this, well, this covenant membership, are we only doing it because we're part of a denomination? Are we asking people to join the denomination? And we're saying, no, first and foremost, we're asking people to process, think through, and then covenant with God. And then part of covenant with God is kind of the historic and global church. For us, in our narrative, it looks like with the covenant church, with Vox. But first and foremost, we're remaining, being connected to the source of life. That's the instruction, right? And then the second part, this is what I like. If we're now remaining with the vine, there will be clumps of community that will form. And I like that. It's that we connect with God, and then as we connect, small communities and pockets form. And then we're asking for us to covenant with what God's doing in our community. And I think it's such a countercultural thing to do in Austin specifically, to actually commit to something. I was in a bar and I had just met these people and they found out I was married and they're like, what? You're married? I don't even date, right? Because dating is too much commitment, dude, right? And like that's the city we live in. Like we're non-committal. We won't commit to anyone or anything. And it's just going to be me looking out for my needs in my own life. And I think it's a beautiful thing to come together and in light of covenanting with God, and then to covenant with a community that some of us, we may not even know that well, we may not even get along that well, but because of the source, we covenant to each other, and I think that's a beautiful thing. And then the last part of this text is that when we're together then, we bear fruit. And there's this picture kind of connecting us back to the garden, this divine act of creation that in paradise we were invited into. We're in paradise, God was creating, and then he invites Adam into that act of creation to name and participate. And that as we're now connected to the source of life, that through Vox, through our talents, through our gifts, through our work, through our vocation, through our education, we continue to participate in this act and bear fruit. And so that's kind of the setup, that's the lectionary text. But this morning, what I want to do is hear some of the stories of people in our community. And just to highlight a few, and then we're going to pray a covenant prayer together, and then we're going to celebrate. Cool? So we're going to first call up Matt and Weishan Oaks. So let's give him a hand. You guys can have a seat. I'll stand. So why don't you guys tell us a bit about yourself? You guys just got married. How long have you gotten married?
Hi, I'm Weishan. We just got married last year in June, so 11 months ago, I guess.
How's that going?
It's going pretty good.
Just still married. Good job.
Still married. Yay. Went to the marriage conference. Didn't have a big argument last night.
So, Weishan, why don't you start? Like, where are you from? How did you kind of find your way to Austin?
Okay. I have to apologize in advance. I had a huge slice of cake for breakfast, and it's like, if I start talking really fast, just kind of flag me down and slow down. Anyway, I grew up in Singapore, and I moved to Houston when I was 12 with my parents. I grew up in a Methodist church and then Presbyterian church, and then when we went to Houston, we joined WHCC, which is the West Houston Chinese Church over there. And so that's a little bit of my background.
Okay, so you grew up in Singapore and then kind of like Methodist, Presbyterian, and then came to like an immigrant church in Houston.
Yep.
Right? La. You're from Singapore, you end your sentences with la. So if you want to just feel like you're from Singapore, just go, that was great, la. Okay.
Matt's got this down pretty good. So.
Yeah. Really. So Matt, why don't you tell us your story with a Singaporean accent?
Okay, la. So I'm an actual Austin original, born right up the road at St. David's. One of the few left. Went to school here, went to UT, started out as a CS major and then moved into computational mathematics and graduated with economics. Yeah, they ask a question, like, how many of you used to be an engineer? And 50% raised their hand. And now I'm a software engineer at a very small company here in town, IBM. I actually grew up from a church perspective. My parents divorced when I was fairly young. And so I grew up with my dad going to a fairly small Bible church in North Austin. With my mom, she remarried and went to an Episcopal church. So very, very different dynamics.
Yeah, and I think when we were talking, it was kind of neat how your stories from the immigrant church, and then kind of from a Bible church, and then to an Episcopal church, there's kind of reflections and flavors of that in our community now as well.
Right? Yeah, definitely. I mean, from the, you know, the Episcopal Church Book of Common Prayer, you know, there, it's much more ritualized. A lot of the things that we do here at Vox, you know, I identify with. It's kind of home for me. Prayers of the people, communal prayers, the Eucharist, the prayer that we join in before that. So it's very familiar to me.
Okay, thank you, La.
Yeah. Okay, La.
And so I actually remember the first time I met Matt. So before Vox formed, we were trying to figure out in the mother church, which was Austin Chinese Church, an immigrant church, how to plant a church. And while we were doing that, we were a college ministry. And so one day Matt wanders in. Do you remember that first day?
Yes,
so
I do.
So what year was that?
That was 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
So, yeah, I was looking for a church home, and I had some Asian friends, and they invited me to come check out this community. And so I went, and 3 weeks later I was doing production, and I'm still doing production.
So when you walked in, it was a room full of Asians, and you might have been, we were discussing this, you might have been the first non-Asian, possibly.
Might have been.
It came down to like you, Brooke, or Phil Eckhoff.
Yeah, there was like three of us white guys right at the same time.
That came around the same time.
Yeah.
And then you were kind of helping with media stuff and video stuff, mm-hmm. and you've been doing it for...
10 years.
10 years.
Yes.
And so,
still going
can we
strong.
Just say thank you?
Yes.
They do this like week in, week out.
Yes. Thank you.
And him and Enoch do it, and sometimes there's a rare occasion where both of them aren't here. And then I think Waylon stepped in once, and then he was like, man, this is hard. He said, you have to multitask, and these guys just do it so well week in and week out. And so, thank you, La.
You're welcome, La.
So you're doing media stuff. Mm-hmm. And then through that, you kind of met Wei Sean. You want to tell that story?
Do you want to tell? So we were looking for a lot of additional help at the time. At that, this was in 2005, 2006. Our production was a lot more involved than what it is now.
We had to kind of set up everything. We were like in a space that wasn't ours. We had to bring everything and set it up, right?
Yeah, it was like a three-hour ordeal. And so we needed additional help with production, and I met her through a mutual friend. She was doing production for a campus ministry, said, hey, do you want to come help out the church? And so she said yes. And there was also another girl, Yvonne, and I'm married to her, and Enoch's getting married to Yvonne, so it worked out pretty well.
Okay, so let me get this straight. So you were doing media at the church, you recruited these two girls, they helped out, and then you married them.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't the intention, but that's just kind of how it ended up working out. Yeah. So,
Thanks be to God.
Most definitely.
And then, Weishan, you kind of help out with the middle schoolers now. And so I remember when you first came... Actually, do you have a picture of some of like the early media things? Do we have some?
Yeah, so we used to do a lot of videos, promos and stuff. And
so whenever Matt, he came in on a motorcycle.
Yeah, I lived in North Austin, so I commuted down to UT on a motorcycle, primarily because I could pull right up in the campus, and I didn't want to drive and park in the Dishfalk parking lot and walk across. But we did a lot of videos early on, and one of them I remember... I found it and took some screenshots, was a chase sequence on my motorcycle. And I just remember it was really cold outside. It was like in January and we were having problems. And actually,
it was probably like 20 degrees, maybe?
It was cold. It was really cold for Austin. And we did this chase sequence and it turned out pretty well. But.
Okay. So let's kind of transition to middle schoolers. And you all had a retreat recently. Yeah. You want to tell us about that?
I think we have some pictures back here, but we have, so the kids ministry when I came to Vox was like Noah, who was one, Joshua, who was like five or six maybe, and then Zachy. So it's like really small. And then
that was
now
it. We would give them little books in the back. They would sit on the ground and then they would like color and draw. That was the children's ministry.
Yeah. And now we have, you know, there's kids everywhere and they're also cute. And we have quite a few boys who are getting to be in, you know, in junior high. And so we've been trying to figure out how best to help them be part of the community. And in October, we had a little sleepover at our house with six of the boys, and Rosalie and Skylar and Tim Jones came and helped out a lot too. But, you know, we played, Tim brought this like huge bouncy ball and frisbees and all this other stuff that we didn't have because we don't have children or play sports, apparently. And then, so here's this picture of a dog. I was really surprised, actually. We were out there for maybe 2.5 hours. Nobody got hurt except for the dog. Whoever said that lab retrievers kind of play through the pain and they just ignore it, they were 100% right. Because, you know, we've been playing for 2 hours. The dog's been chasing everybody around. And then finally she sits down and we're like, she's kind of sitting funny, you know. And Matt went up there and looked at her and the little pads of her paws had kind of started coming off because she was running so hard. The poor thing. She's an inside dog. We don't exercise her a whole lot. And I guess it was just too much for her. So we had to take her home, and you can't really see it in the picture, but bandage her legs up in like this, you know, the like stretch bandage.
So she was like the middle school overnighter casualty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically.
And then is the puppy okay now?
She's okay. She's completely fine. Runs around, still does the same thing. Apparently they don't learn.
Okay. Yeah. And I think it's really beautiful, kind of both of your stories, just seeing, you know, how we were hoping to be a community that was reflective of the city, that was diverse. And then you came in really early on in that. And then just to become hopefully eventually multi-generational, and then to see it go from like Zaki, Noah, Joshua to, you know, more kids now. And so did you have any takeaways from that overnighter from the middle school?
I think we had a lot of fun. We kind of intentionally planned it so it wasn't like a let's sit down and read the Bible and you know, talk about our feelings, because it was 6 12-year-old boys, and I pretty much knew that wasn't going to go well. I have two little brothers, so, you know, boys don't like to talk about their feelings. And but I really did think that this time for them to play and hang out with each other was really important for them, because currently on Sundays they don't really have a venue for that. You know, they're sitting here with us learning, hearing the same things we are, and so I just wanted to give them a time where they could hang out and get to know each other. I think my personal biggest takeaway from that was that 12-year-old boys are actually really helpful and really clean people. Like, I think when they left that Sunday, my house has never been so clean on a Sunday. They took the trash out, cleaned the dishes. Somebody offered to make breakfast. I didn't have any food to make, so we bought donuts. But
they're cleaner than Matt, basically. I'm just kidding.
I don't think I'm allowed to say that.
Okay. And then just maybe for both of you, I'd love to hear, you know, in light of this, and you've kind of been with us since the beginning, why covenant? Why covenant to a community?
So as Good said, our society now, I think, is not a very committal society. And at the same time, it's also very busy. Like, you know, everybody's busy with various things. And I think for me, I'm not going to speak for everybody, but I'm kind of lazy. If I don't have something on my to-do list to be done, or if I don't have a clear goal in mind, it's just not going to happen. And for me, covenant means kind of a reminder that, hey, I wasn't put here to watch Netflix all day or, you know, play, draw something. I was put here for a purpose, and this is a reminder for me that God has a path for me and for us and for the community that we're part of.
Okay, thank you. How about you, Matt?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, we're told to love others as we love ourselves, and I think it's a way of exemplifying that, of living that, you know, by committing to, you know, looking out for the interest not of myself but of the other person. and, you know, staying true to that. Just like she was saying, you know, it's instead of you being lazy, it's intentionally engaging in something and taking part of something that's, you know, important and will benefit the other person, but also yourself at the same time.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Let's give them a hand.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, we've got Dallas and Tandra. Let's welcome them up here. So why don't we start off and just tell us a little bit about yourself and who you are.
Me first?
Sure.
Go for it.
Okay. Which part about me?
Just what your name is, where you're from. Why don't you tell us a bit about your journey of faith?
Okay. I'm Tandra. I grew up in Amarillo, Texas, which is a very exciting place of nothing really but cattle and flatlands. And I was really plugged into the church at a very young age. My parents got divorced when I was really young, but my grandparents took me to church every single Sunday. And when I got to junior high, I got really plugged into the youth group. That kind of became my life and what I did. And I was kind of a strange teenager. I was really afraid of disappointing God because I really loved him, not because I was afraid of God. I didn't want to disappoint my parents, and I had a real huge passion for serving Jesus, and my mom thought something was wrong with me. Now I still think something was wrong with me as a teenager. So I would spend my spare time working with my youth pastor and praying for people, writing people cards, and that's when you used to send things in the mail when I didn't have an email address. And my grandparents played a pretty huge role in that. I was very close to my pastor and my youth pastor, and that was a lot of what I did kind of growing up.
Okay. And then Dallas, you kind of found your way to Amarillo. You want to tell us how that happened? And your story was not very much the same.
No, not at all. I was actually also born in Amarillo, but my parents, we left Amarillo to go to Phoenix, Arizona when I was in third grade. And so I grew up in Phoenix. I never went to the same school twice until my junior year in high school. I was skateboards, punk rock, graffiti in high school. I played some baseball, but that was my mom like drug us to church, but I just hated it. Like, I can't remember once growing up when I was just like glad to go to church.
And then you wandered off for a little bit. You want to tell us kind of where you wandered off to and maybe the process of, you know, Jesus chasing you and what that looked like?
Yeah. Like I mentioned baseball, I wandered back to, or my parents moved us back to Texas my senior year. And I went to play baseball at West Texas A&M, which is like 10 minutes outside of Amarillo. Then I decided that was junk and moved to College Station. And I lived there for 3 years and then just sort of floated around, and I ended up back in Amarillo, and my brother was there, and just really jumped off in some pretty heavy drugs for like 4 or 5 years, just tons of meth, and just got sunk in that world.
So you broke bad.
I did. Yes.
Okay. And then what happened there, and how did you and Tanner meet, and how does Jesus come into this?
Yeah. So that was this crazy spring break. Me and my buddies just decided we're just going to sort of put all our chips on the table and just do drugs for like a week. And we did. I mean, we did a ton. And at the end of that week, I had sort of, you know, I moved back to Amarillo and all my friends were sort of around drugs. And during that week, we stayed awake the entire, you know, 8 days. And at the end of it, like, everyone was gone. Like, all the relationships were just broken. And I ended up, like, sleeping in a park one night at the end of it. And I sort of crawled back to my mom's place. And I was like, I don't know what to do. And she's like, well, you can stay here, but you're coming to church with me, like, every Wednesday night. And so I did, and actually the first Wednesday night I went, God was just like, you can't go this way anymore. And so that's sort of, I just like tossed all the paraphernalia and all the stuff, and like I didn't have a job. I mean, I was just like playing around with drugs for a long time. So now I'm jobless and living with my mom, and I just like read the Bible every day.
And then that was the church. That was Tanner's church.
Right.
And then you actually knew Dallas's mom before, right?
Yes. I went to Bible college after I graduated high school. And while I was there, my pastor called me and asked if I would come be the youth pastor at the church. They had a couple of youth pastors, but then their kids were coming into youth group. So they were like, we need to wean the parents out and bring somebody else in. And so I moved back from California home and co-youth pastored with someone who is now my brother-in-law. He married my sister. And but Dallas's brother was in the youth group at the time, and he and I got pretty close through his ups and downs with drugs. I had never met Dallas at this point, and got close with his mom because of his brother. And we took this mission trip to stay at this homeless shelter, and his brother came with us, and he was like, you just need to marry my brother. And I'm like, your brother that wants nothing to do with God, he's dealing drugs and doing drugs, why would I want to marry him? And he's like, don't worry, he's going to get saved. And literally a week later is when Dallas's total transformation happened. And
okay. And then so you guys meet, get married, and then you kind of...
It was like 3 months.
Was it three months?
But...
It was fast, right?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
So what happened after that? There was... kind of like a tug to church planting and maybe Detroit and Toronto.
So the guy that I was co-youth pastoring with married my sister. I stepped out of youth group at that time. She kind of took my place, and they were kind of planning a church plant. You can kind of tell that story better than I do.
Yeah, a college group started, and I'd actually been a part of this college group, and then I went off to California for a while to go to Bible college and came back. And this college group was just like taken off, and it was like amazing. And there were like 60 people meeting in this guy's living room every week. But then my brother-in-law and I were really good friends, and we started just dreaming about going somewhere else. If you live in Amarillo, you dream about going somewhere else often. And we loved doing this and felt called to do this. So we were just going to leave Amarillo. And, so for 2 years, we were like pulling together a core team and just going through the scriptures, and then also going to this college group, which is sort of becoming like a house church. And we were talking about Toronto and Detroit. We wanted to go, we really felt Toronto, but I guess like Canadians don't really want Americans to come unless you have something of value to offer.
We're suspicious.
So at the time, neither one of us had our degrees. So I decided to go back to school and finish up. I knew I wanted to get a job where I could sort of be flexible, and just finished up my art school. And we spent a lot of time just planning to go do church plants.
So out of that, there was kind of like this tug to be a pastor, church plant in maybe Detroit, Toronto, and then it doesn't end up happening, right? And you want to tell us about that, Tanner?
I can. Okay. Just sort of sum it up, I guess. I think there were just some like differences in like my brother-in-law and Tandra. One, I think, like some theological differences, and we were just sort of working through that. And you know, how do we come together around different ideas that he had? He grew up Presbyterian. And just some different ideas about how to do it. I think like philosophically, like how church looked, we were all sort of pretty much on the same page, but there were just some differences. So it became sort of a real struggle to me to feel like I'm going here and I'm taking my family here. And then Tanner just sort of having some hangups, and we worked through that and prayed through it. And the team actually went, and a couple months later, God was like, all right, your marriage is important.
It was like your first year of marriage too, right?
Second year. Yeah, well, this is sort of taking place over that time, yeah. So.
Okay, and then, so that kind of leads to the door opening, moving to Austin. And then, so how did that happen? And then how did you all connect to Vox?
So we didn't go to Detroit. And then, but all, again, knew that we didn't want to live in Amarillo. So this church, sort of the college group that was becoming a house church, the pastor had actually decided to sort of move down to Austin and sort of transplant what he was doing to Austin. And we were like, hey, can we come? We just want to be a part. And then one evening he actually had come over to our house and asked if we would help do some leadership stuff with the plant. So, we came down. He was a little delayed in getting here. Like, part of his team had already come. They'd been here like a year and a half, 2 years, just sort of flopping around. And and then we came, and it was actually another year before he even got here. He had some like business stuff he was trying to wrap up in Amarillo, and his family health stuff. He did get here. So backing up a big, during the 2 years that we were sort of planning to do a church plant, like a big piece of the equation for us was like living close and proximity. And so we were reading just a bunch of books on how that was happening. And we really felt like God was saying, this is something new, and I'm, or not new, but I feel like we've gotten away from it. Let's see if we can pull it back. So living close is like a huge piece. And the church plant that we came down with just wasn't ready to have those conversations, I think. And then we had stumbled across Ecclesia in Houston and like loved, we would just listen to podcasts. Also, when you're in Amarillo, there's not a ton of like resources. So podcasting and books when you're thinking about church planting was pretty important. So Chris, we would listen to Chris C a ton. And I think Gideon actually spoke down there one time, and it's like, oh, Gideon, that's Austin. And so then we started listening to the Vox podcast, and they were actually like talking about like neighborhoods and who is your neighbor, and you know, like sort of shaping life around loving your neighbor. And so we visited, pretty similar. I mean, we were like one of five white people at the time. I was like, hey, there's the other.
Yeah, I remember the first Sunday. I think you immediately like quadrupled the children's ministry.
Yeah.
Because it was like your whole crew and you got a ton. And then Virgil, who's since moved back to Amarillo, so like quadrupled the kids' ministry. You're like,
yeah.
Hey, families and kids. And
yeah.
So you've been a part of the community for about 4 years. And I would say, would you describe in those 4 years, there's been some ups and some downs? And maybe you want to talk through that a little bit.
Me again.
It's at the end.
Do you want to take this one?
I'll talk a little bit about mine. Now I can let you do yours. Where should I start, though? I have a tendency to talk too much, so I'm trying to keep it concise. I guess when we first moved to Austin, that's when our marriage got really, really, really good. And we started going through these struggles together, but kind of on the same page and wrestling through beliefs and doing a lot of study in the scripture that really helped us, like, okay, well, this is what we really feel like God has called us to. And a lot of that is what Dallas just described. We started seeing in Vox by listening to the podcast, living communally together, very purposeful life outside of the church. And so it was very exciting for us to be able to do that together.
Right, outside of the church, you mean outside of Sunday?
Yes, yeah. Sorry, outside of Sunday, living the church every day. And so it was really encouraging, like, for us to be able to do that together, where before we were just doing two different things and kind of fighting against it. And then I think Dallas, yeah, he kind of hit this other stage that we went through, which was really, really tough. And I'll let him kind of explain his part. And for me, it was, I kind of looked to him a lot. He is my mentor in a lot of ways too, spiritually, and I kind of just started going with him. So I'll let you explain that.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, actually, when I was talking to Gid about this, it sort of dawned on me. I read this crazy book, which I think is actually a pretty good book, Forgotten Ways, and they talk about the sort of the revolution that was happening in China and with house churches, and that they actually didn't have access to scriptures, that they just weren't like a part of
what weren't available.
Were, yeah, just weren't available. Mm-hmm. And so I had this crazy idea. I was younger at the time, and I was like, man, I can take the scriptures out of my life and God will be real. And like, if it, or, you know, like, he'll just be there and I don't have to read. Like, they don't have to read. Like, this can be real. And just a silly thing. And I think just over time, I was working at the Statesman, and I just started like questioning everything, and just sort of never, for like a year, just sort of never came back around. And like things got harder. I don't know, like the old Dallas sort of like creeps back in, you know, just selfishness and laziness, and when like the scriptures weren't a part of it. And it's sort of a slow process. So I got a year and a half in, I was like, I don't even know how to go back. Like, I sort of want to, and I never really left. And there was just this, you know, small like spark every so often. But yeah, just the love of God had just gone. I just didn't.
It was kind of like this slow drift. Like, it wasn't like one sudden thing. But then you look back, you're kind of disconnected from God, scripture, community. And then in those few months, we didn't even see you guys very much. You kind of like disconnected and holed in, right? And then when would you say was a turning point, and how did that happen?
So the one that sort of, I mean, again, this is sort of process, and we're still rolling in it. But Evan, so you guys know Evan. Evan lived with us for almost 6 months. Which was a really rough summer. It was like, it was hot, and I was just like pissed off all the time, and I was just working too much and like drinking too much caffeine and not eating well, and my boys are crazy, and just a lot going on. I was just sort of down, and Evan was with us, and then Evan went to training in
Kansas City,
and he came back just pretty stoked on God, and like excited about his calling, and excited to sort of shed the person that he had been for a long time. And I think just over like a week's time of us just sitting out on the front porch, just talking about that, it just, God was able to just reach in and be like, all right, dude, like, I'm turning this thing around. And we, you know, so it like flared back up, and things started to change. I think from that was sort of a catalyst.
Yeah, and I think you were describing like, it's not one specific moment, but it's kind of like you look back and you see God's hand and orchestration in it. And what I think is interesting about that story is, for both of you, I kind of still see like an undercurrent of being pastors, and that's always been in you. And then, so even when Dallas was, you know, in that dark place, when Evan was needing a place, he kind of, you guys opened your home and really pastored him through kind of, he was in a kind of a dark place too. And God used both of those moments to kind of bring you all back too. Yeah, and I'll just say one more thing. There was one night, there was a couple, young couple here in Austin that was kind of going through like a difficult situation, and they just needed some help, and they didn't know who to call. So they called Dallas, Tanner, and me. And then we were sitting in your back porch with the fire pit. And then I wasn't even necessary, because I was watching them pastor this couple, and it was really beautiful. And so maybe just in light of kind of that whole journey, why covenant? What does that mean to both of you?
For me, I think just from my background to the importance of people in my life, and not just having friends around you, but people that you can really be real with, that are not afraid to come to you and say, look, I know you think this is great that you're not reading the scriptures, but look at your life. It's kind of going downhill. Have you noticed that? And just being able to have someone that can come and kind of get in your face when you're not doing okay, or someone that can come and encourage you and lift you up in the times you need that, live life and rejoice when it's time to rejoice together, but also be able to call you on the carpet when you're not walking like you're supposed to. And I think that having that relationship where you invite someone in to say, look, if I'm not doing what I'm something I'm supposed to do, we're in this covenant together, and that is a part of it. And I mean, that's a lot to ask someone, but I think covenant to me means I'm saying that we're doing this together, and I'm giving.
And you'll do it for someone else, yes, as they do, yes, to you. Yes,
right? And I'll let you in my life, and I'll let you have that place, and we can still be friends and love each other through that. And then Dallas will expand a little bit more on it.
No, I mean, absolutely, that's it. It's covenant is is me saying, like, you have access to my heart when it's stinky. Like, call me on it. I'm gonna do the same for you. We can rejoice together. We share. But also just like family and roots. You know, I mean, not going to the same school twice ever until your junior year. I think I had some like roots issues, and for me this is a big part of it. We feel like Vox is home, and we're ready for the roots to just dig in and go deeper and just be here. So
okay, let's say thank you to Dallas Atonement. And I'll just kind of throw that out there. I know Dallas kind of came into the Vox community with the conversation about proximity and neighborhood, and then I know that their midweek group is having some fun conversations around the same thing, and it's vigorous, and I like it. So, all right, and then let's call up Miss Ainsley to come on up. Let's give her a hand. Ainsley.
I'm not gonna lie, I've had fears of getting up here and like missing this stool altogether.
You got it. So
I faced it. Just
Ainsley,
now.
Why don't you tell us about yourself, where you're from?
Okay, well, my name is Ainsley, as we know, and I'm from a little town called Statesboro, Georgia. It's right outside Savannah. And when a lot of people say, "Oh, where are you from?" I'm from Georgia. You from Atlanta? No.
And you're from a little bit outside where Karen's parents live, my in-laws, right?
Yeah, actually, yeah. Kind of know where they have a hardware store, mm-hmm. Right? Kind of know where that is.
Near SCAD. So, why don't you tell us about your journey of faith and kind of when it became your own and how did that happen, and walk us through that a little bit.
Can we talk about how I first met Vox?
You want to start there?
Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
Just because it's the funny story. Okay. So whenever I moved to Austin, and I guess part of that journey of faith was
how would you describe yourself spiritually at that point?
At that point, very, very disconnected, very, I don't know. I think I was like borderline agnostic at the time, like kind of. I'd gone through a lot of stuff before then, the 2 years before that.
And very suspicious of the church.
Yeah, extremely. Right. And my mom was like, go to church when you move to Austin. Go to church. There's actually this church you should go to because I know this person who knows this person. And that way I can somehow keep an eye on you spiritually. So I'd drive all the way up north to some church and it just didn't feel right.
And then you had a friend who was visiting, I think.
Actually, I was visiting Austin before I moved here, and she was like, "Hey, let's go to Chinese church." And I was like, "I'm not really into church, but all right, cool." Like, it sounded different, you know. It sounded like something adventurous and exciting, even though it was church.
The Chinese church.
I know, right? Cool. And so I was like, "Okay,
let's go check it out."
So we go there, and I'm like, "Wow. It really is like Chinese church."
They're only like four white people. And then you kind of lost touch and then didn't come for a while.
Yeah, well, it's weird because like I was there and I was like, oh, these people are actually really cool, you know, like church people, cool. I don't know. Yeah. And so I lost touch with that friend for a while. And then
so the first night I met you, we were kind of in the Seabrook building. And then there was like a craft night going on. And
it
then
I think Artist Prayer.
Artist Prayer.
By the Fire Sea Girls. Ladies. Yeah. Yeah.
So there's like, you were doing some prayer art things.
Yeah.
And then Karen and I walk in. And then I've never met her. And she starts jumping up and down. She's like, Chinese church.
And no. I was like, I just like started shrieking.
She being racist? Like, is that appropriate? Like,
I was so excited because, you know, I'd gone to that other church and my mom was like really pushing, go to church. I was like, you didn't push my brothers like this. What's up with that? You know, I think she just kind of knew what was going on. And so I, you know, met these people and, you know, it had been on my mind for a while. And then, you know, saw Kid and Karen and I'm just like, put all these things together. I was like, this church has found me. That's crazy. Like, these people are really cool. Chinese, this is the Chinese church. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. And then, you know, sweet Karen, she was like, no, actually it's called Vox Media. And I just was not even listening. I was like, Chinese church, Chinese church. And I swear I probably called it Chinese church for a
the
good
first
month
few years, I think.
Yeah, it was.
So, and then you started, you know, participating in the community and then those first years you were still wrestling kind of with where you were at. And I remember a conversation we had at what's now Thunderbird, used to be Clementine. Mm. And then, do you remember that conversation?
I do remember that conversation. Mm-hmm. Well, to give you some sort of, I guess we'll go back to the to the walk of faith kind of thing. Just growing up, you know, my family went to First Methodist when I was younger, and you know, just kind of, it's just whatever kind of church it seemed like. It didn't really feel that loving and, you know, not
kind of
really community
cultural
thing.
Maybe
right. It was more like a, hey, we come here on Sundays, enjoy your life, you know. And so my mom got breast cancer when I was going into kindergarten, and I, you know, I've asked her like, why did we change churches, you know, when I was so young. And part of that was that, you know, she just kind of realized, we didn't actually change churches until 2 years after this, but she just kind of realized that in that place, there was no community. She didn't really feel that supported. She didn't feel that loved. I mean, there were a few people, you know, and she had great friends who really surrounded her and loved her. But just not a whole lot of compassion. It just kind of seemed very disconnected there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she said, well, my dad was a Presbyterian minister. I'd really like to reconnect with my roots. And so we found First Presbyterian Church of Statesboro and got plugged in and, you know, got really acquainted with everyone there. I mean, we were singing in the choir and doing all the, like, youth minister, like, ministry stuff. And it was just, it just felt like home.
Okay. And then you head off to college. And then so from that, it kind of surfaced with some things that needed healing in your past.
I went to college and I joined a campus ministry that you know, at first was in a really pretty shiny box, you know, hey, come, we'll be your friend, and you know, we're gonna love you, we're gonna do all this stuff, and come to our party. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then brainwashed for 2 years. It's just, I, you know, drank the punch. Pharisaical community there. More about quantity over quality, although they preached about quality over quantity. And
then there were a couple moments, like pretty specific, like where you were needing some healing or some support, and you were, it wasn't available, right?
Yes. There's one moment in particular after I went on a mission trip with this organization. I'd had this person in my life who really meant a lot to me. You know, we were romantically involved, and then we decided to become just, you know, good friends. And I mean, I wanted to marry this guy at like 17. And so, you know, for us to be just friends, I was like, yeah, we'll be just friends. But of course, there wasn't that. You know, I was still holding on, but he was a soldier in the army, and right after I got back from being in Thailand for the summer, I got word that he had he'd been killed overseas, and that was a moment that shook everything. You know, I was angry at God, I was depressed, I was questioning everything. I just kind of was like, why, you know, constantly, why this person, why this at all, you know, why war, why injustice, why all these things. And I got a phone call like 2 days after I found out, and from the organization, like the leader of that for our school's chapter. And he was like, hey, Ansley, I haven't heard from you this weekend. Like you said, you would call me, but I just wanted to see if you were still going to do this Bible study, because you're in charge of this team, and you need to come do this. And this is, you know, like your responsibility. And I was like, hey, man, my best friend just died. and I'm really not handling all this stuff, like anything right now. I can barely even go to class. And he's like, oh, well, I guess you're not very serious then. So call me when you're ready.
And then that, you know, was hurtful and then kind of like brought back pain that you've had since, like, from your childhood and then high school and then in college. And then it kind of brought everything else to the surface.
It was definitely a moment where, you know, I kind of was like, I've spent 2 years of my life with these people. I've poured every waking moment that I could into, you know, trying to further the mission and just, you know, like, really fired up about it. I mean, I changed so many things about, or, you know, tried to change so many things about my personality. I let these people in. I let them, you know, tell me what was wrong with me constantly. For God. And
so it became like another thing you needed healing from.
Yeah. Yep. It was you know, I thought it was my community. And then after that conversation, it was like, so it was like I walked around campus. I didn't know anybody, and all these people that I'd spent all this time with were very distant, and just feeling so alone. Mm-hmm. And feeling alone was something that I had always struggled with, you know, especially, and I think also in my past, having just really deep intimacy issues. Whenever I was 6 years old, I was molested by a female friend. And I was in that vulnerable space, you know, with someone that I trusted. And I was, you know, whenever I talked about it the next morning to an older, to her aunt or something, she said, you know, don't ever tell anyone this because you just had a dream and you'll be in big trouble. And it's just like, I was open and I was vulnerable even at 6 years old, and I was still shot down. So just, that's like one moment that kind of carried on into other instances of just being bullied at school, you know, having friends or people who I thought were my friends, you know, then prank call me later on, you know, about my weight and my personality and things like that. And then also more sexual abuse. When I was in high school, I was sexually assaulted by a friend. And then I was in a sexually abusive relationship in college. Around the time that the community I was in kind of, you know, wasn't really supporting me, around the time my best friend died. And it was just a lot of really deep, hurtful things that whenever I came to Austin, I didn't even realize that I needed all this healing for.
So you get here and that's coming with, all that's coming with you. And then you meet this church and you're not sure whether you should connect, or, and there's intimacy issues. And so what was that process, I guess, of healing, and why come to this point of a covenant, which is, you know, committing to a group of people and God?
Well, it's interesting because whenever I, you know, broke away from that organization, I was like, you know what? I don't think that, you know, God's people, like God's real people exist. I, you know, in my head, I'd imagine these people who were like happy to know God, but yet, you know, believed in like social justice and like helping each other and loving your neighbor and, you know, holding each other accountable, but still like being gentle and open and allowing people to go their own journey and have their own process, but while, you know, remaining there. And I was like, these people don't exist. And then the first Sunday that I came to Vox, you know, I came with Gina, and we sat down. I was beside Michelle Mal and Jen Lee. And I just remember being there and just feeling, I was like, I know that these people that only existed in my head are here. And I cried the whole service because I just knew that I was in the right place, and I didn't know what that really meant. And so, you know, for years, I just kind of was like, well, I guess, I don't know. I love Jesus. Yeah, I love Jesus. All right, do I tell people that? Like, I know I used to tell people that, like, all the time. And I was like, hey, you should. I even had, like, a henna tattoo that was the bridge diagram on my arm one time for, like, 2 weeks. And that was whenever I was in the former organization. And I was like, do I do that again? Because I really don't want to. That doesn't do anything for anyone, right? Like, no. It's like, hey, bam, you know.
And then crazy. So it's kind of been so, ups and downs. And then,
lots of ups and downs.
Yeah, and then that conversation we actually had at Clementine was, you were struggling with, you're like, man, I'm a Christian and been in Austin. Just people hear that. And then I have no friends anymore. And then she turns to me and she goes, and you're a pastor. That's like the worst. How do you handle that? Right?
I think my words exactly were, that is like the most uncool thing to be. Yeah. How do you handle it? Like it. I really, basically the whole conversation was like, how are you so cool? Yet you're uncool at the same time. Like
very,
I think I was
uncool.
Just
yeah.
exhausted yeah. at that time with trying to be cool. Yeah. Like, you know, I tried to be cool my whole life and it just didn't, like, tried so hard, didn't really do anything. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do this when I feel is right, you know?
And then for you, even this covenant then is a continuing journey. Like when you made, you're like, okay, I'm going to go to the retreat. And then you show up and you kind of had like this physical, like, moment where you wanted to withdraw again, right? In the back room?
Yeah. Recently, actually.
At the covenant retreat.
That was
the actual
January.
Covenant retreat, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The actual thing when you were going to commit, that one.
Yeah, and it's funny because I was only here for like an hour. But it's amazing how God works in an hour. I'd had so much going on at that time. I'm just really depressed, and I have a suicidal past. You know, there was specifically one moment where I was just, I had a knife in my hand, and it was on my wrist, and I was just, let's go, let's do this. And so like those thoughts were coming back again, and it was just a really scary place to be. And I was like, why doesn't my community help me with this? Why doesn't anybody know? Like, does anyone else feel this way? Like, am I supported? Would they care? Just a very, you know, selfish place to be. And we had just gotten our dog Fitzgerald, and I was dealing with that responsibility. I even had her there and she was making me angry. And so we were just in the back room, and I was like, the people would come in late, so I was like, cool, we're all together in this. And we got to some question, I don't even know if it was on topic or off, but we were talking about just kind of like the dark areas of our lives, and I was just in the middle of it. It's one of the hardest times that I've lived here, it felt like. And I just opened my heart for that however many minutes long, and just was like, this is what I'm thinking, and I don't know that I feel supported by my community. And I remember Rachel and Mick and Bags and somebody else and Skylar were all there, and they just surrounded me with so much love. And it was, and Skylar even called me afterwards. She's like, you're my homegirl. I'm here for you. You're awesome. I love you. You know, just little moments like that, you know, times where I've needed confirmation just because I have intimacy issues that are deep and they are old. And, you know, I think that's part of the suicidal past I've had. Like, I can't go any further. Like, I can't handle anymore. I can't give more of myself. I can't open up anymore. And then it's like, God's like, no, you can do it.
And then, so for you then, why covenant?
Because I have intimacy issues. I just really think that it's really important. It's one of those things, like, can I go any further? Can I let these people in? Can I share my life? Can I, you know, what if you allow these people to come into your life too? Like, you know, I do a lot out there, but I don't always have a lot in here. And so I feel like with that covenant, being able to share the whole back and forth, you know, and we live in a very individualistic society, especially Austin. But I really, you know, I've seen how communities are really important. And then just making that commitment as a commitment phobe is just a really big deal for me. And I think it's important. I think it's a huge opportunity for growth and development.
Okay. Thanks, Ansley. So we just wanted to highlight a few of the stories. A lot of you were able to come participate. Some of you wanted to participate, haven't been able to make it. Some of you who've participated are still processing and kind of in the journey, and we want to like really communicate that we're with you in this journey, and we want to give you time to process. But this morning, for the people who have come to that place, we're going to celebrate with them. So if you have are there, we'd like to ask you to stand, those who are joining as members. Just go ahead and stand where you are. And then we're going to pray a prayer together, and we're going to ask the leadership, so staff and Nav, if you can please come on up front, please. And then we have a prayer that we're going to pray together for the community. When it's in bright yellow, we're going to all respond together. For those who are becoming members, it will be in like a lighter shade of beige, but it'll say for joining members, and that's for you to read. And so let's do this together, and I'll start us off. Father, as you so loved us, let us love one another so that others will see you living in us, and may your love be made complete in us. Jesus, you have called us to follow and be your disciples. Convert us from self-centeredness to a life centered in you, from a life on our own to life with each other, from closed doors and fences to loving our neighbors, from claiming ownership and greed to living simply and sharing freely. And this is for the members who are joining, so please read this. According to God's grace, help us follow in your way. We embrace the calling of life in the Christian community. We covenant to God, the church, and the Vox community to live out this calling together, to love God and our neighbor. We strive to grow in formation, mission, and community under the leading of the Holy Spirit. And this is for us as leaders, and we're committing to the Vox community. As leaders in the community, we commit to a life of servanthood. We covenant to facilitate this calling of life together, to shepherd, teach, empower, and care towards God's purposes in the world. And everyone, may this love and witness call others to your way, and for joining members. To you, Jesus, and your church, we covenant in the name of the Father, of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. So can we just give a hand and welcome those who are joining? And you guys can have a seat. Go ahead. And I think our prayer is that first we're covenanting to God, and that we will participate in who he is, his love for us, what he's doing in the world. And then through that, we'll connect to each other. And then hopefully, you know, in 5-10 years, we'll look back and we'll tell stories of fruit, and we'll tell stories of what God's done in us and through us. And so thanks for being here this morning.